Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Burt Show.
All right, let's celebrate. This is a big deal from over the last couple of days, right?
Yes, sir. My album will officially be out and available everywhere in about a week and a half now, on March 29th.
Look at you.
Thank you.
Your sophomore album.
My sophomore album. Yes, ma'am.
Move over Beyonce. Here we go. Right up the charts,
she
baby.
She decided to release her album the same day as mine, and I'm not moving it. She want to compete, we're going to compete. So I'm actually very excited for the album to be out. One, because I'm excited for everyone to hear it. And two, because I always hate this part of the process, because the album takes so long to complete. It's so many different challenges that you have to get through. And once it's finally finished, there's still a lot of things that need to be done before you can actually get the music that you've worked so hard on to the people. So this part of just waiting and waiting and waiting is like the worst part. I can't wait for it to just be out already.
So 99% of us have never put an album together and never will. So what is the process? So from the start of you writing songs until it actually gets released, how long is that? And what's the toughest part of that?
So it's different for everybody, I would say. The steps are different. The challenges in each step are different. But typically, to make an album, you usually start with an idea, like a journey or a theme that you almost want your album to follow. For me, it's just moments of my life put into music. That's why I always name them like moments in time or mementos in this case. So once you have your theme that you want to run with, you have to line yourself up with producers who make beats that will not only match your theme, but match you as an artist. So that's like the first step. You find a bunch of producers who are willing to make a bunch of different beats for you. You select the beats you like, and then you make songs based off of those beats. So once you finally get your beats in order, you got to write. Once you write, you go into the studio to record what you've written. Sometimes you like what you wrote, sometimes you don't. It's always one of those, you give or take. You might make 40 songs, but feel like 10 of them will really be good enough for the album. So it's a lot of work. You're making a lot of records. You're taking a lot of different opinions on the records. And then once you finally have like your solid 10 to 20 songs that you usually would want to put on an album, you got to send it in for mastering and engineering. So the people who are better than you at actually making the music sound good and crisp and clear, whether it's in a car or it's in a club or wherever it may be played, you want it to sound as good as it possibly can on all different formats. So you got to wait for that part to be done. And then once that part is finally done, you got to get all of your samples cleared. Oof. So if you use samples from other people's music back in the day, they have to clear that. Once you get that cleared, you got to get everybody's approval on all different platforms for them to even put your music on the platform. And then once you finally have that all done, your album is ready to be released.
I promise I will not be offended, and this is not a loaded question, but is your studio time and your music the thing that gives you the most joy of all the entertainment things that you do?
It's funny you asked me that, because I didn't know. Like, before I started working on this album, I would have said I'm not sure, because they all do such different things. And it's you get a different feeling of joy from it all. But I will say something about this last album. It was a lot more enjoyable than the first. I don't really know why. I think maybe because the first album I was making through pain and heartbreak, and it was kind of just fulfilling that what I was dealing with. Whereas the second album was more like, I just want to have fun. Like, I really just want to make an album that is true to me and is all of my thoughts, but it's fun. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm trying to get through something. I'm just genuinely enjoying it. So the process of making this album is probably the most fun I've had creatively in a long time.
It sounds like the first album was therapy, whereas the second album, you're just able to enjoy yourself.
That's true. I think I was in a better place in my life, and I think you just create different art based upon what you feel, because you have to be true to that. You have to be authentic to your feelings in order to create from within. And this album, I was just in a better place, and I think it was a lot more fun. So Yeah, me in the studio creating this album was a completely different me and probably the most fun I've ever had. And speaking to, ironically, the process of choosing songs, this particular song that I released this weekend on Instagram, which is now technically the first official single of my album, it's ironic because to me it goes to show how much sometimes you have to get out of your own way, which I tend to struggle with. And this song, I didn't even want it on the album, like at all. I was actually having a full-on debate with everyone that's close to me, my creative process of creating the album, and they all were against me. I'm like, I don't like this song. Sometimes you make a song, and it's been in your mind for months, then it comes out, and you hear it, and everybody else hears it very different than you, because you heard it in your head first, and it doesn't always sound exactly like what you thought it would sound like, but you can't really anticipate how people are going to take to
sure.
it. So when people started to take to this record so well, I was literally debating them on if I should put it on the album.
So the way that copyrights and trademarks and stuff work now is that we got to be very selective on the music that we play on the radio, because sometimes we can't play it on the podcast if we don't get the artist's approval. So do we have your approval to play it on the radio and on the podcast, and will you sue us?
No, I will not sue.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, so yes, this is the first single officially from my album Mementos. It's called Black Street Boy, and ironically, it's a song I didn't even want to be out, and it ended up being the single, so enjoy.
It's like a real song. You do like real music.
Yeah, real music, man.
Congrats, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Where can people get their hands on the album?
It will be available March 29th. It's called Mementos, and you can get it wherever you download your music.
The Burt Show.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
After hearing this news, it's going to be Gildan on the floor instead of Versace. Because apparently Bruno Mars is $50 million in debt at a Las Vegas casino. He's basically paying them to let him have a residency. Because he's had a long-term relationship with the Park MGM in Las Vegas for nearly a decade. And allegedly, he has racked up $50 million in gambling debt with MGM. The source is also saying that he's apparently taking home $90 million a year with the current deal with MGM. And he also just launched a cocktail lounge called the Pinky Ring. So I don't know if that somehow is going to balance it all out, but I think maybe we got to drop Bruno a Venmo over the weekend and help him out.
I'm sorry. He's on his own on this one.
Yeah.
How do you end up $50 million in the hole without somebody? And you never know what's going on behind the scenes, but clearly, like, his money people must have been going, dude, I mean, we're already $5 million in. You gotta pay this off. And it ended up getting to be $50 million.
Even if it's been a decade, how somebody could accrue that amount of gambling debt in that amount of time and you not have, if this is true, and you not have somebody, like, this is when you need to take a hardcore look at who you're surrounding yourself with, that you don't have people in your life that are trying... And, maybe he did, And those people tried to stop him, and he was like, bye-bye, and just kept on moving forward by accruing that debt.
I know what helped. It was this guy who told this story. It went viral. He's like a high-stakes gambling guy, and he was shooting his own reality show, and he happened to be gambling next to Bruno Mars once, and he said that he watched him lose $17 million in a few hours.
Oh my God.
So I guess that's how you do it.
Oh, I want to throw up. I'm on some betting apps, betting on games from time to time, but they're only like $50 to $100 bets, and when I check back in after a loss, it makes me want to throw up. It's only $50.
I almost wonder if he has some kind of deal, because the casino is the same place he has the residency. So I almost wonder if they just kind of give him like some grace, like, well, you're already here performing, so like, just it's Monopoly money essentially.
Or maybe they do the research on what artists they can bring in that they already know have a gambling problem, knowing that they're going to make money off of them in the long run.
So basically, he's paying to have this residency essentially what's going on. So prayers out to Bruno Mars. Hopefully you can balance some of this out, because $50 million is a lot of money. All right, a star of the Harry Potter films is telling fans of the adult fans of the franchise that they need to grow up. So this is an actress named Miriam Margoyles, who already sounds like a Harry Potter character in real life. She played Professor Sprout in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And she's like, you know what? If you're an adult and you still are a fan of the series, you need to move on with your life.
I'm not unhappy about it. I just think that it's for children. And if your balls have dropped, then it's time to forget about it. You know, go on to other things. It's a great series. It's a wonderful set of films. I'm proud I was in it. But it was 25 years ago. You know, grow up.
I think you gotta let people have joy where you can have joy. Come on.
Uh-oh, Cassie just aggressively moved the mic in front of her face. Let's go.
It's not just for children. It was a benchmark of an entire generation. And also, it deals with some very heavy themes. Loss of parents, war, like politics. So yeah, on the outside, you can be like, yeah, it's about witches and wizards at school. It's for kids. But it clearly struck a note with a good chunk of a generation, to the point where they still care about it later. Now, like, if your whole house is Harry Potter themed, that's one thing. But I think it's very unfair of someone who just acted and maybe wasn't part of all the books and the culture just to dismiss it that way, because it's so much more to many, many people.
Yeah, I feel like you can't relate to fans when you're in it, because you see it from, like, a work standpoint. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are fans, I'm sure, of, like, maybe there are people who have Burt Show memorabilia all around their house. That's great. But, like, I love the Burt Show, but I'm not going to hang up T-shirts around my house. You know what I mean?
Would you be a little judge if you met a dude that was in his late 20s, early 30s?
You could have stopped. Are you going to be judgy when you meet a dude? Yes.
Specifically, I'm aiming this one at you. So you meet a guy, he's 30-something years old, but his passion is Harry Potter. He goes to the conventions. He dresses up as the characters. Are you getting judgy about that?
100%. Okay. It's a little bit of a turnoff, but I will say, if he's like some macho dude who could pull off the robe really well, I don't know, maybe it could lead to some fun role play. I don't know. If he can use his wand really well, then it might be something to look into. But yeah, I get what she's trying to say. Like, it is a little bit, like, if somebody has like a very niche interest, whether it be Disney or Harry Potter, I think sometimes it can be a little bit of an eye roll, but let people have their fun.
Yes. No, for sure. You do you and do what makes you happy. There's somebody out there for you.
But there might not be.
Yeah, but no, there is.
There might not be.
It won't be me. Yes. And it won't be me.
Most right. Don't go with those people.
It might not be no.
All right. This actress says she loves filming her more intimate scenes when her director is her own son. I'll tell you who likes keeping her movies in the family on your next eBuzz on The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Burt Show's busted baby brackets are up online right now. Kudos to you guys for identifying that your newborns were, quote unquote, not aesthetically pleasing. How many babies we got here?
32.
32. Every single one of them deserves to be in this bracket.
Yes.
they earn a spot.
There is not even a question on any one of them.
And you can tell some were born recently. Some are some pictures from back in the day. You can tell, like, those old grainy hospital pictures that they set up and they came in and took a photo of you. But yeah, it is a, y'all need to start a Conehead Facebook group.
Whoa. Are you guys on the page right now?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Go look at baby number three, who was superstar. so startled.
Baby number three is my favorite. I thought nobody else was going to care about baby number three because objectively he's not the ugliest, but this photo is so horrendous. He looks like he has just seen a ghost. There's a receding hairline and the double chin is so cute.
I got to be honest with you. Baby five to me is on the cusp. Like that is not an ugly baby. That is just a baby on a bender.
Because the headband always helps.
That is a tired baby right there. But outside of that, it's a pretty cute baby.
And I think some, you can tell, like it's either a busted baby or it's just a bad picture. You know what I mean? Like it's a bad angle, it's bad lighting. But for the most part, whew.
Baby eight is 103 years old. That is just pissed at everything.
Baby eight looked like I had no intention of being here at all.
I did not consent to life.
No one asked me.
But I love baby 11 because it looks like its head is going to explode. Like its brain is too big for its skull.
Right. It's like it's holding its breath to get something. baby 10 is so ugly that it's cute.
Yeah, that's just a bad picture. It's the like face. Like he needs to take his finger and put it up to his lips and go.
Yeah, the angle didn't help.
I kind of feel bad for baby 14.
Me too. Yeah. That's an old picture, man. I can't even make fun of baby 14.
Yeah, let's just move past 14.
I think at some point I really would like to see what these kids ended up looking like because I'm sure they're beautiful now.
Of course.
Well, back then, not so good.
I want to know if baby 15 still has its buck teeth. I don't even know you could have teeth at this age.
That's not a teeth. That's the lip. You sure?
Positive.
That's when you know you got a problem. If you can't tell if it's your lip or teeth, you got a real problem.
That is a shriveled up little pruny lip.
You need some EOS is what you're saying.
Yes. A little Vaseline.
Yes.
It came out with teeth.
There has been documentation of a baby coming out with teeth.
And it was this one right here.
No, that is not teeth. That is a lip that needs some Blistex.
Bless these babies. You cannot scroll through these without laughing hard. They're up online. You can vote today, starting today. What did we call the first round of babies?
This is the first round of fuglies.
First round of fuglies, and what's the next round going to be?
So the next one will be the sweet 16, so maybe the not so sweet 16.
Sour 16?
Scary 16.
Scary 16.
Scary 16.
All right, so go vote online today, anytime at theburtshow.com. All right, the MIA being a, you know.
Yes. What the hell was that?
I was trying to figure out how to transition in MIA, and I didn't know how I was going to get out of it.
Well, that ugly got you distracted.
Yeah, it has certainly thrown me here. All right, so is she being an a-hole here? Dear Burt Show. P1 here. If you know what a P1 is, then you are one. If you don't, you're bad.
You're not.
My future husband and I got into an argument tonight, and it kind of involves his two sons, 16 and 21, that I've been raising with him for 10 years. Tonight, the doorbell rang, and we were not expecting anyone at all. DoorDash, Amazon, visitors, nothing. And I just looked at him to get it. He said, I'm supposed to, I got to go answer the door. And I told him, yeah, women and children don't answer the door to strangers ever. So he answered the door and it was a lawn care solicitor. Whatever, she says. However, afterwards, he asked me, what do you do if I'm not here? And I told him that if I'm home alone, I don't answer the door at all. But if the 21-year-old big, tall son is here, I ask him to answer it. He got so mad that I'd put his son in danger instead of answering the door myself. I told him, your son is big and tall and huge and street smart. He stands a better chance of defending himself against the strong arm intrusion than I would, except if maybe I had a weapon. I would never ask the 16-year-old to answer the door because he's short, thin, and not street smart at all.
Wow.
And he's underage.
Okay.
He's a minor.
That's all you had to say.
She never mentioned that. Because he's short, thin, and not street smart.
I mean, you do have those kids, like you, and you can tell immediately. Yeah. You know a kid that has common sense and street smarts, and you know a kid that does that has zero of that.
That might hit a little close to home.
Okay. and it's so crazy that they both come from the same DNA and in the same house.
I'm not sure,
but they're
But he still feels like it's my job as the future stepmom to answer the door to protect both of the boys. I told him I would be. I would be much easier to strong arm, and there are other things that can happen to me as well. So no, I will not answer the door. But main question, am I the a-hole for asking the 21-year-old to answer the door, or should I just ignore it like I would if I was home alone? She says, thanks, y'all.
So I do not think she's an a-hole. I get where she's coming from. If I'm home alone and like we get a random knock, I'm not answering the door. Like, you know, the dogs are going crazy. You've already, you know, peeved me off because the dogs are going crazy. I'm not going to answer the door. Now, if your kids are there, adult or not, the way I look at it, if I'm not comfortable answering the door, then I shouldn't have one of your kids answer the door. Full stop. Doesn't matter if 16 or 21, you know, able-bodied or not. I don't know where you live, what kind of neighborhood you're in, whatever. If you're not comfortable answering the door, then don't have your fiance's child, whether it's an adult child or not, answer the door. If he's living on his own and wants to answer a door, then fine.
He's 21 years old. It's a grown-ass man. Answer a door.
If it's a grown-ass man, he needs to be living on his own.
I don't know about all that. I don't know, like with economics and finances.
No, I get that. If I'm saying that, I have no shame whatsoever if you're in your early 20s and living with your parents. But if she is not comfortable, this is like in this instance, if she is not comfortable answering the door, then she shouldn't expect his adult children to answer the door.
Here I go. Maybe old fashioned again. If I have a 21-year-old son, I feel like it's part of his responsibility to protect the family. So he should be the one answering the door.
I agree. I don't think she's being the a-hole at all. I grew up with two sisters in the home, and if ever my dad wasn't there and it was just my sisters and my mom, even before I was 21, that was just kind of something I wanted to do. Like, you that's what you do as the next guy up, as the man in the house. And get a Ring camera so that everyone can answer the door from inside and you don't have to open it.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, this is about to be an incredible ad for a Ring camera because you could just take one little look outside the door and see if it was an axe murder or not. And if it was, then, you know, just grab a knife and answer it or just ignore it.
He's 21.
Yeah.
That's a 21-year-old man.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
He'll survive.
But if she, my thinking is if you aren't comfortable answering the door, then you can't ask him and expect him to do it.
And I'm just the opposite. I think if, as the woman, if I don't feel comfortable, I got a 21-year-old man in the house that can answer the door. Totally, totally completely different.
100%.
It's the Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
I have a math problem.
No.
For the Burt Show.
No, please, no.
Yes.
I specifically was a broadcast journalism major, so I never had to do math again.
This is an interesting math problem. It is going to make you think. I don't know if there's a right answer. I don't know if there's a wrong answer, but I would love to know your all's answers, all right?
Oh, I'm with a math problem we can't get wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't get it wrong.
But you can't get it right either.
So here's the math problem, okay?
Okay.
You have a couple who are living together.
Mm-hmm.
Not telling you what the sex of the couple is should matter. But a couple that are in a romantic relationship,
mm-hmm.
they are significant others to each other, are living together. One of the people makes $180,000 a year. The other person makes $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Their rent is $3,000 per month. How much should each person contribute to the rent?
Oh, there is a right answer to this, and I know the right answer.
Okay.
You contribute an equitable amount. You contribute what is equitable to the amount that you make. So, for example, mm-hmm. you both got to make, you got to get to $3,000 at some point. But the person that makes $180,000 is going to contribute more because that's more equitable to their income level. And the person who makes $40,000 contributes less because that's all, you know, it makes it, you're not making this person completely broke. They are able to contribute what they're able to contribute. But it all has to equal $3,000 at some point, obviously.
Okay. So what do you think the 180,000 person should put forth the $3,000 and what should the 40,000 person put forth the $3,000?
I would say I feel like it would be about fair if the 140,000 person put at least 2,000 up and then the other put one.
Okay. No.
So 1 to 2.
Hang on. Let me pull up my calculator. I have a formula for this.
Is it 140 or
180?
180. So I feel like it's 22%. Like, I think the $40,000 person should put towards $680 towards the rent.
Now, does it change anything if you know what the sex is of the person that's pulling in the money?
No.
No.
Money's money. So, okay. So a person who makes $180,000 a year can theoretically afford $5,000 a month in housing. So I think it's fair that they would split that in half and contribute $2,500, and the person who makes $40,000 should contribute $500.
Fascinating. Because so I saw this on Reddit, and then I also saw a post on Instagram, and so it started going viral, and the comments were spouting off. So the boyfriend makes $180,000 a year. The girlfriend makes $40,000 a year, and their rent is $3,000. Now, he was the one who posed the question on Reddit as to what he thought or how they should split the rent. And a lot of people on there were going like, well, you should cover the rent, and then she could cover things like groceries or pay a bill or something like that. And then people were like, no, that fluctuates. And especially with inflation right now, groceries are like stupid expensive. And so there was a lot of back and forth of people saying he should just go ahead and front it. And then other people saying that they should split it evenly, like it doesn't matter. And it was just a very fascinating debate. And I thought a very fascinating math question to ask the Burr Show fam.
See, I wouldn't, if I were the guy who made the one, was it 180?
180. Uh-huh. He makes 180, she makes 40.
I wouldn't mind covering it if, like, now we got to look at, like you said, the groceries and the things mm-hmm. of that nature. So if you're going to take care of that, then I would just cover the entire thing. Or if we split it halfway, I would take care of everything else. So I guess it's just different ways you can do it.
I'm not a huge fan of spicy foods, but I do like a bit of spice in other areas of my life. Reality TV fights make it spicy. My margaritas make them very spicy. And when it comes to the spice cabinet you keep beside your bed, you got to have a wide variety of spices to keep things heated up. If you've been looking for some more flavor to add to your life behind closed doors, Adam and Eve can help you bring the heat with some fun new items to turn up the temp between you and someone else, or if it's a single girl summer. There's plenty of options for those of you riding solo this year. Adam and Eve is offering 50% off just about any item, and they'll include free shipping and rush processing so you can spice things up ASAP. And you don't gotta worry about your neighbors noticing your delivery. Adam and Eve ships things out in discreet packaging, so you and Deborah down the street don't have to make awkward eye contact when you get your mail. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item and select, just enter offer code Abby at checkout. That's ABBY at adamandeve.com. This exclusive offer is specific to this podcast, so be sure to use code Abby to get your discount. Code Abby.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The Burt Show.
All right, intern Courtney, what is the appropriate level of intimacy between a woman and her gay best friend?
Yeah, I feel like I am battling a question that maybe a lot of couples have. I currently am not in a relationship. However, I've still received a lot of questions and comments. I have a gay best friend. He is a guy. I feel like that kind of matters for the situation. He just contacted. He took care of me after all of my surgeries. So like, he's been there like my day one. And I recently posted a picture of us on social media where we had laid down and like, we're both physical people, and we ended up falling asleep, and like, his hand was like on my upper thigh, I guess, like we were just kind of cuddling. And I received a lot of comments about how like it was disingenuous to pose as if we were like a straight couple on social media. And I was like, okay, well, I didn't feel that way because he's a comfortable person for me.
Well, they're assuming that's their assumption of the intent behind the photo. That's not like reality of the intent behind the photo.
Correct. I think just the placement of the hand was kind of, it triggered some people. And I was just battling because I've had relationships in the past that have felt a little bit weird about me getting in the bed and cuddling with another guy and, you know, taking a nap. And someone posed the question, if it was a guy and he had a girl gay best friend, it would not be the same situation. And so I started thinking about that and I was like, I kind of feel like that's true because there's just a different type of relationship that they would have. And so I'm coming like for my future relationships and the friends that I have now, I'm just not sure what to say because I feel like it's totally appropriate. I feel like getting in the bed, cuddling with my gay best friend, like he's a person of comfort for me. I don't feel like there's an issue with that at all. But I've talked to a lot of couples where the guy, it's probably just insecurities, but he feels like it's not appropriate for his girl to be in the bed with another man, period.
No, I agree. I feel like it's just a level of respect. It doesn't matter if you're straight, if you're gay, if you're a man, if you're a woman, like you need to respect those physical boundaries that you have, like, you know, being in a relationship. So like, for instance, with my husband, like I wouldn't cuddle up with anybody in bed, whether it be like in that cuddly manner. Don't get me wrong. I have definitely on girls trips, we have doubled up. I mean, Abby and I were in the same bed not that long ago.
Oh, yeah.
We were getting wild when I was,
when I ended up getting accidentally stoned. Yeah, when I was passed out.
But I feel like if you're going to like take it to like a cuddling level, one, you got to be on the same page as your significant other, and you're also going to have to respect your significant other's wishes. Like, personally, I would tell my husband, yeah, man, woman, gay, straight, I would prefer you not be cuddling up in bed with somebody. If you have to share a bed in a hotel room, that's one thing. But if you are snuggling up, I would have an issue with that.
For me, if I'm the boyfriend in the situation, it would be the same. Like, it wouldn't matter if the guy or the woman was gay or straight. It's like a respect thing more than an insecurity thing. So if you wouldn't do it with a straight guy, then I don't think you should do it with a gay guy either. But it should be whatever you would allow from a straight guy is exactly what you should allow from a gay guy. I don't think it should matter.
To me, when it comes to your friends, I tend to group like the girls and the gays together. So for me, I think it would, from like if I had a boyfriend in some dream fantasy world, if he would be okay with me doing like cuddly things with like a woman, then to me, he should be okay with it being like with a gay guy too. Cause to me, they're kind of, I don't want to say one in the same, cause obviously like there's differences, but to me, I'm kind of like, I see a lot of my gay guy friends as sort of like one of the girls and I know how harmless it is. So to me, I feel like if he would be comfortable with whatever I'm doing, like with the girls, he's also got to be comfortable with it with the gays as well.
That's kind of how I felt. I just feel like, you know, my girlfriends and my gay friends, neither one of them pose a threat to me, right? Neither one of them pose a threat to my relationship. So I feel like I'm the same. I kind of categorize in like in the same little whatever. But I feel like maybe my age plays some kind of role in this because I am 21 and I am young. And I feel like when you're older and you're like in a more serious committed relationship, maybe that's where that comes into play. But like right now, I'm very strong in my stance that like if I were to get in like a committed relationship, like I don't want to cut off that boundary with like a person who's comfortable for me. And I'm not sure how to approach that just because I know that there's no threat. And if he's somebody that makes me feel safe and I want to lay down and take a nap with him, I don't know. I guess I just don't really see much of an issue with it. But I do understand, like, I guess when you're older and in like a more committed relationship, how that would kind of shift a little bit.
Like I've shared, like I have several very close gay friends and I have shared a bed with one gay friend, but we've never like spooned and cuddled.
Yeah, I haven't even done with my gal pals. So I'm intrigued by your level of comfort with this person. Like as somebody who fears emotional intimacy, period, like the thought that you just want to like cuddle up on a couch with this guy and spoon is so fascinating to me. Like it's interesting to me that this is even something that's coming up for you.
Yeah, I think for me, because I had two reconstructive surgeries on my foot after a volleyball injury, and so he was taking care of me to the point where like he was helping me walk like to the bathroom, and like when you get to like such an intimate relationship with somebody, it's really hard to not have any kind of, I don't know, I guess physicality is, it's my love language for sure. And that's the way that like I show appreciation for him and that's the way I show comfort. And I don't know that I really want to cut that off.
Right now, do you? And then it'll be an interesting bridge to cross when you do find somebody that you want to be in a relationship with and how they feel about it.
Yeah, maybe he'll want to cuddle with you and your gay best friend.
Yeah,
you
could be a threesome.
You could be the middle spoon.
Be a throuple.
The Bert Show.
All right, before I even get into the email, You're going to answer the question. If you know your friend cheated on their husband, are you going to go to the husband and be like, yo, man, your wife cheated on you?
No. Nah.
And this is your friend. Like, that you're, it's not like, like you're friendly now with the husband, but first and foremost, you knew her. She did something wrong. Would you go and tell the husband?
I'm not doing it. I'm staying loyal to my friend.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely not. I would encourage my friend to do the right thing. Like, I would be there for them. But at the end of the day, like, my loyalty is to my friend and not their husband. My job as their friend is to encourage them to do the right things, to steer them in the right direction, and be there for the emotional fallout when things don't go right. But I am not, that is not my circus, not my monkeys.
All right, so the email reads, hi, Bird Show. I'd like to stay anonymous. I'm from Australia and looking for some advice. Good day. I love it whenever people come in from other countries. I'm 32 and have a close girlfriend group of 11. We've all been friends since forever. We all went to the same high school, however, formed our group after school. I've been rattled with some news about one of the girls, and I'm not sure what to do with it. To give context, we are close. I was her bridesmaid, she was mine, and her husband was the MC at our wedding. I found out that she's had a 3-month affair on her husband of 8 years.
Oh.
She also has 2 young kids. I'm absolutely devastated and heartbroken for her husband. She didn't tell me about the affair. However, when I found out, I confronted her and asked if it was true. She admitted it and is adamant it's over now. It's over because he ghosted her, not because she chose to end it. She has no plans on telling her husband anything. She says she realizes how bad it is and it's made her appreciate her husband more than ever. But does it? She didn't cry when I confronted her, and she seems to be going about her business as usual. I can't shake the feeling that her husband should know about this. She was my friend first, but I also consider him a friend, and I hate that she has done this to him. I've let my husband know about the whole thing, and he also carries an enormous amount of guilt for not saying anything. Important piece of context. In the first year of their 12-year relationship, married 8 years, the husband slept with another woman one night at a club. He admitted it. They worked through it. As far as I know, there's been no other stepping out of the relationship. I feel my friend justifies her actions as being similar to what her husband did 11 years ago. I, of course, feel it's completely different now that there's marriage and kids involved. What should I do? Please help. Thanks, confused friend.
You say nothing. You're acting as judge, jury, and executioner. Your friend isn't carrying on. It doesn't matter the reason it ended. You also don't know all of the insights into that friend's marriage or their psyche. It'd be one thing if it was carrying on and causing active harm, because you can pick up things like STDs or whatever and share them. So I understand that note. But if she's put it to bed, it's done. She's like, it was a one-time mess up. I appreciate my husband more. Maybe let her have this second chance at her marriage.
It was a 3-month mess up.
It's still one time. It's still like a singular incident. If she was a serial cheater, mm-hmm. like, I'm a big fan. First of all, it's not your relationship.
Preach.
It's over. She messed up. She said she appreciates her husband more now. There are kids involved. So if you go in, yeah. you're going to bust up a home, a family with somebody who has said, I appreciate my husband more. And so if she was like, I'm going to do it again or over and over again, different story, I think you stay out of this one.
To me, I'm a little bit confused if the affair has ended or not, because to me, the way it's worded sounds like it's still going on. Because to me, the big problem here as a friend being on the sidelines is if she's continuing to step out on her husband, I'm going to feel some type of way. Not that I'm going to like sabotage her relationship in any way, but to me, the feeling of what I need to do differs whether or not she's decided to stop or not. If she made the mistake for 3 months and decided to end it and now she's changed for the better, all right, fine. I can step back and feel like my conscience is clean. But if I actively know that there is an affair continuing going on, I'm gonna feel very weird in social situations with them, like sitting at dinner with them and looking across the table at Bobby or whatever her husband's name is, and knowing that she's actively hurting him would make me want to be a little bit more involved in the resolution of it. Not that I'm going to tell him or anything, but I'm going to be a little bit more of a hard ass about it.
Yes, not my relationship. It's not my business. And see, this is what happens when you got a close friend group of 11 people. You're going to find yourself in some drama. This is why I got 3 friends. I would not want to be.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes, I'm telling you. But I feel bad for the husband, obviously. If anything, I would sit down with my friend and really try to figure out what's going on his and her mind. But as far as being the one to blow the whistle on my friend, that's just not how I'm built. I'm staying loyal to my friend.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything either. I mean, after even having the details, she says she's adamant it's over. The other guy has ghosted her. So I'm like you, Abby, if it was going on and like us hanging out and sitting there knowing that and trying to act like nothing's, I would have to set some boundaries as like, no, we're not going to hang out with you as a couple if you're actively doing this. Even though I did do that, but there were extenuating circumstances.
It's a little different.
Yeah, a little different. I'm like, girl, go get yours. He's a beast. In this instance, Cassie said, to reiterate, like, you got kids involved. She says she's better off for it now, and she sees the error in her ways. I think you're doing this just to kind of like get up on your high horse about where you stand on infidelity. So it's best just to like bow out.
Bow out, girl.
Get it. The Burt Show.
All right, Katie, you got some money, but you don't know where it came from.
Not at all. And I need you all's advice on if my moral meter is a little off.
Yeah, girl, you don't have to say anything. Yeah, it is. I love you, but it is.
It's been off for some time now. We was waiting for the right time to tell you.
The minute you took those fries off that woman's plate,
it was all downhill from there.
That was a done deal. Yep.
Katie's like, I didn't mean in life. I meant in this one instance.
Right. Oh. This one situation that I'm about to tell you.
Oh, we take it back.
Yeah,
don't worry
about
it. That you haven't heard yet. So we've seen the stories, right, where people have accidentally had money like deposited into their bank accounts from banks.
Yep.
And it's been like large sums that they have to return, or like the money trucks opening in the back and the money going all over the highway and people trying to collect the money, right? We know in those situations you're supposed to get the money back, right? Because that's not your money.
Or maybe the universe was just blessing you in your bank account.
Look at God.
What are you doing?
That's how I see it.
Right?
Yeah. God's like, it ain't me.
I feel like in those situations you give money back. If you find like a random 20 on the street, no one else is around, that's something you would probably keep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, I received a random Cash App. Not a request, but money was being given to me. And in the description, it said for lunch. And so I'm looking, I'm like, okay, I don't recognize the Cash App name. So then I try to go through like phone numbers that I have, because you can do like a reverse search and see if you have your contacts match a Cash App name. I try to search through that and I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like, and who would randomly be sending me lunch money? And it's not like $20 for lunch. It's like a couple hundred.
What?
Ooh.
Wow. What kind of lunch do you think you eat?
Right?
So it's, I was going to say maybe like two people went out to lunch. One person picked up the bill and that person's like, hey, here's my portion of lunch. But if it's a couple hundred, they must have been organized something for somebody and they were splitting it.
Probably.
It could be a scam.
Mm.
And this is what I'm thinking, right? Because when I try to go back and go through all the numbers and stuff and look this name up, I even try to look up the name based off like social media, see that name matches like an Instagram account or something like that. I couldn't figure out who the person was. And I know that if someone sends me money on Cash App, it actually has my picture. So you know who you should know who you're sending it to. And my name is not common the way it's spelled. So then I was like, maybe it is a scam. Because Cash App scams, they're like common, where someone will send you money and then they'll request it back. And then I don't know how it goes down the wormhole, but I just know you're not supposed to send anything back.
Oh, so if you send it back, then all of a sudden they have access to your bank information?
No, what happens is they'll send you like, it's usually a big payment. And so you're like, sweet, and you cash it out or whatever, or it's sitting there and they'll be like, can you send it back? And you send it back and it pulls from your payment at the same time, like they cancel the transaction send. So nothing comes from them. So you're sending like $2,000 back to them out of your account and you don't have anything.
So I looked that up and I was like, well, you know what, Katie, you can't send the money back, right? So I decided to leave it sitting there for a couple of days to see if anyone texted me like, hey, did you get my lunch Cash App? Did you get my lunch Cash App? No one did. So I transferred it to my bank account. And I kept it. But now I don't know if that was the right thing to do.
I don't see anything wrong with it.
I feel like you should send it back.
Now that you have it.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you have it in your possession, you can send it back.
And that's a lot. If it were $20, I might be like, happy birthday lunch to me. But $200 or whatever.
Okay.
That's sizable.
How much is it?
Three.
$300?
Three of them things?
Yeah. Oh.
What if this is good karma? Because wasn't it like a couple months back, somebody stole your credit card or your debit card at some point and used it for gas money?
Oh, yeah.
And you just let them take it? Mm-hmm. What if this is the universe's way of saying, shout out to you for not calling that a fraudulent charge, knowing someone might be in need, and you're getting it like three times over? What if it's really just the universe blessing you?
You know what? I like that.
That's great perspective, Abby.
Right there. 300. That is not right. Do not listen
to
her.
You need to message, listen, message the Cash App person and be like, did you accidentally send me did you mean to send this $300 to somebody else? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't respond, keep it. If they do, send it back.
Okay, so give him a chance to respond.
Well, I thought you did that part already.
She
no. You didn't even send them.
I didn't know.
I waited for them to message me. I'm like, clearly, if you realize you sent the money to the wrong person, after a couple of days, you would message someone and say, hey.
No, how many times have you sent money to somebody and you never thought about it twice? They don't tell you whether or not they got it, and you just assume that the app did what it was supposed to do. I mean, your buddy, how many years did you go sending money to your friend to pay him for gigs?
It was
and he
wild.
Had no idea how much money was in his Venmo?
I think it was like over a year.
Right?
And it was like over $1,000, yeah.
So you need to reach out. That would be the polite thing to do.
Okay, I'll do it.
Okay. All right, now before we leave, we have got to find out. Intern Messiah, you came to us last week. You had a couple of friends. You picked up the tab for everybody's dinner, right?
Yes.
And you had some friends who owed you some money, mm-hmm. and they hadn't paid you, so you were going to send a Venmo request to get that cash because you're a college student.
Yes.
And you're poor.
Yes.
And that's impolite of them to do that. All college students are poor. What are you talking about?
Sounds like he's getting paid pretty well.
He's picking up the tab for 11 people. I was not doing that in college.
That's a fact.
A little sign, but yes. So out of the three that owed me money, two sent it back.
They did.
And replied and said, I'm sorry, I missed it. Like, I guess it was a mistake. I don't think it was, but...
Yeah.
And then the other person said they would pay it in cash. I haven't seen them yet, so we're waiting on the cash.
But see, everybody handled it gracefully.
Did, and I totally forgot that you can request on Venmo and Cash App, so thank you.
Yes.
There you go. All right. That's
there
good.
There you go.
We love
Job
getting
well
paid.
Done. Appreciate
that we
it.
Do.
Get your money.
It's the Burt Show.
Thanks for listening. Get more Burt Show fix at thebirdshow.com or follow us on social media at The Burt Show.